Doom do 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 doom do do. Doom do 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 doom do do. Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 30 of
Boom and Grow Radio.
Hi, plant friends. I'm so excited to have our next installment of the Plant Science with the Sill with my best and most frequent guest, Chris, the plant scientist over at the Sill on Orchid 101. This has been such a requested episode from my listeners and for me because if you listen to the show, you know that I struggle with this Phalaenopsis orchid that I've had forever that I can't get to bloom. So Chris helps me break down orchids and kind of coaches me how to resuscitate the one that I have. And I actually had sourced questions from you guys ahead of time, so it's a great chat. Before we get into that, I just want to remind you that the Popsockets are on sale. The link is in the bio or on my website. And if you haven't joined already, the Bloom and Grow Garden Club is seriously blooming and growing. The group just keeps getting bigger and bigger and more vocal. The Facebook group is so fun. They're such a nice mixture of like total plant newbies and plant experts coaching each other and asking questions. And it's just the plantiest corner of the internet. And I'm so freaking obsessed with it. So if you want to join, it's at www.bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club. And you have to join that way. That's the only way you get the password to the Facebook group. And I do want to let you guys know, if you don't have the password, you're not getting in. And I am very intentional about that. I really want the Facebook group to be only Bloom and Grow Radio listeners, because I think that you guys are a really special brand of plant people, and I want to protect the kindness and wonderful spirit of our specific community. So I just want to let you know there are tons of people that I actually reject, like tons of just gardening enthusiasts that try to come in, and if they don't come with the password, they're not getting in, because this space is specifically for you guys. So I'm not trying to grow it like crazy for numbers. I'm trying to just make a really fun, planty, safe space for my listeners to talk and bloom and grow with each other. I also just wanted to let you know that I am going to be taking what I'm calling summer hours for the rest of the summer, meaning that I will be releasing episodes every other week instead of every week. This will just give everyone a chance to catch up on the episodes they might not have listened to, because I've realized lately I've been releasing some epic, like hour and a half long episodes, chock full of information. And it's also just going to give me a chance, honestly, plant friends, be really present in the growing season of my garden. And I'm feeling like I'm at this moment where I'm processing so many gardening lessons that I've learned. And I want to spend time on Faella Farm and just get really inspired for future episodes to make for you. So if you aren't already, I would just suggest that you would subscribe to the show on iTunes or whatever podcast player you're listening to, just so you don't miss an episode. Because right now, the plan is every other week, but if I get really excited about an episode, I might just release something extra. So being subscribed is going to make sure that you don't miss anything. And even though it's going every other week, plant friends, I have amazing guests this summer. I've done some interviews already that have just been amazing, amazingly informative and interesting. And I crowdsourced the Garden Club for a long list of topics that they were wanting to hear. And I'm currently sourcing guests for all of those as well. So we're just going to be blooming and growing over the next year. And I will also still be active on Instagram with updates on my plants, my garden, sneak peeks of upcoming interviews, maybe some more botanical and booze partnerships with Billy, because you guys seem to have really enjoyed that. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go look at my pinned Instagram stories and just whatever other lessons I'm learning in the garden. So over on Instagram, I'm Bloom and Grow Radio. Okay. So without further ado, I want to welcome back Chris Satch to the show. He is the plant scientist at The Sill, if you don't already know. And The Sill is this amazing plant brand with two brick and mortar shops in New York City and an online shop that delivers nationwide. I love them. I've taken their 101
courses before. I love their pots, which are all locally sourced. I have plants in my apartment from them. The quality of their plants and the way that they ship plants is just unparalleled. And I just love that they have a huge focus on education with online classes and in-person classes that I mentioned and amazing care cards on any plant you buy. And what's really exciting is they just started the Plant Parent Club, which is their monthly plant subscription service. So if you join the Plant Parent Club, you get a monthly surprise plant delivery delivered to your door every month, which is going to be a plant and a fun plant tool or up to three smaller plants. And to me, what's even more exciting is included in that membership, you also get access to their online workshops and free shipping on any other plants. And I've had my eye on a lot of their online workshops. So if you're interested in anything I just mentioned, or maybe you just want to go online and buy just one plant from them, you can check them out at thesill.com. And you can use code BLOOM5 to get $5 off your order. And this also just lets them know I sent you. So I appreciate using it in advance. Now, as a failure of a Phalaenopsis orchid plant parent, I learned so much from my conversation with Chris, and I hope you learn as much as I did, and it brings you as much joy as it brought me. Here you go.
Chris, it's time for Orchid 101.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so excited. When we were just off air, I said I feel like our whole relationship has built to this moment. Finally getting to mine your orchid specialized brain for tips.
Oh yeah, I'm so excited to share with everyone how awesome orchids can be and how easy they can be as well.
Yes, and to give our amazing plant people listeners some context, we're sitting next to a very sad looking Phalaenopsis orchid that I sheepishly showed Chris, and he very graciously kind of gave me some pointers. I'm going to put a picture of it in the show notes, but it's like real sad. So this will be our Orchid 101 section interview for the show. Maybe Chris will come back on and we can just get more and more in depth with orchids, but I'm excited for you to turn me from an orchid killer into an orchid lover.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so happy to do that as well. What a lot of people, I think, don't understand is that the orchid family is one of the largest families of flowering plants in the world.
Yeah.
And that most of their diversity, you don't even see. Like, there's orchids of all colors, there's orchids of all shapes, and there's orchids of all sizes. So there really is something for everyone in the orchid family. And as if that wasn't enough, there are orchids that are fragrant, that are nice fragrant. There are orchids that smell like cinnamon. There are orchids that smell like coconuts. And there are even orchids that smell like New York City trash. So there really is something for everyone.
Yeah. I've been so lucky to see your personal orchid collection and like having you be like, smell this one, smell this one, smell this one. They are such an interesting class. Are they a class
family.
Of plant? A family? They're such an interesting family of plants. And I want to start off the interview by just kind of saying, like, I am the perfect example of someone who's just super intimidated by orchids. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to be super intimidated by plants because they are this family that require specific care. Mm-hmm. But especially from talking with you, the care doesn't seem to be very different. It's just something that we all need to learn. So I think your biggest platform for orchids is that they're really not difficult and they shouldn't be intimidating to people. You just have to learn how to take care for them like you would learn how to take care of any other type of houseplant, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Orchids definitely get a bad rap. I don't know who started it, but you know, orchids are actually really easy and they can be really weedy. It's just that their care is just a little different from normal houseplant care. But it's really not that hard and it's really not that intense. And orchids really are not as sensitive as you think they are. In fact, I was talking to a couple of orchid suppliers from, you know, my friends. And they were telling me, yeah, you know, when they ship orchids, they literally toss the plants in crates. They don't even wrap them. They toss them, bare root, into crates, and they ship just like that. And they get tossed around, they get beat up, but they end up coming out just fine, and they just, like, pop them into the pot. So orchids really are resilient.
Right, because it sounds like, I mean, I know people who have told me,
oh yeah, I just forget about my orchid and then it reblooms. So if you're like a plant parent that travels a lot or, you know, doesn't want to be watering your plants every day, I do feel like orchids might be a good option for you, right?
Yeah, certain orchids would be good. So so some orchids do need more care than others. Mm-hmm. You know, some orchids do live up to that, you know, reputation of, you know, being needy.
Right.
But those are not orchids that the normal person would come in contact with. Those are really like collector species orchids. Most of the orchids that you would see at like Trader Joe's or Whole Foods or whatever, those are orchids that are specifically selected to be the hardiest and the best adapted to indoor conditions for your house and home. So it's those kind of orchids that I'll focus on here in the 101, and it's those kind of orchids that you'll pretty much, you know, come into contact with most of the time anyway.
Yeah.
So those orchids are, you know, they have their perks, they have their benefits, but they're much easier than, like, and even some of the species or collector's orchids are easy, too. Like, I have a bunch of Cattleya orchids, and I have succulents growing in their media. I can show you a photo of that. And, like, literally, if you can take care of a succulent, you can take care of a Cattleya orchid. So, that would be a kind of orchid, you know, that you could probably get away with, you know, not caring for as much because, you know, I do have succulents growing with those and I have an encyclia that I have growing with succulents as well. So there are some orchids that are super, like, low maintenance, very tolerant. One of my, you know, inspirations and orchid mentors, Mark Hatchadorian of the New York Botanic Gardens, I got to meet him and he's awesome. And he's one of my orchid inspirations. I think he has a couple of books out too. But, his phrase for orchids is benign neglect. Most orchids like benign neglect.
Okay.
That's similar to what succulents want as well.
Yeah, totally.
You know, just sort of like to be forgotten about. And honestly, for my orchids at home, and I have everything from the Trader Joe's orchids all the way up to like super hardcore collector species. And for them, it's just, you know, I really touch my orchids only once a week. You know, some of them I'll like spritz like every other day, but most of them I just pretty much leave alone and they do well enough.
Wow. Okay. So before we get like deeply into orchids, let's just do an overarching, like, what is an orchid? How long, I mean, I know they've been around like longer than anything. So like what makes an orchid special? Like what is the family? Just kind of give us the background 101 on what it is and what makes it so different.
So botanically, what defines an orchid is orchids are plants that have, one of the features that unites the orchid family is they have a unified column. So basically what that means is in the flower, all of their reproductive structures are pretty much fused into this very unique reproductive structure called a column. And so another feature that they've modified is all the stamen, the pollen-producing parts of the flower, those have all been modified into pollinia, or really sticky big pollen sacs that orchids have specialized to sort of stick to their pollinators and go on to the next flower. So basically they have this, and it's really hard to describe using just words. If you Google orchid column, you know, you'll see diagrams.
Maybe we can
put
a diagram in the show notes or something.
Oh, that would be
okay,
good.
Okay, cool.
So, you know, orchid column, that, you know, there's the sticky underside, which is the female part. Like, if you just knew regular flowers and you tried to figure out where the reproductive structures of an orchid are, it's a little complicated.
Okay.
But it's a unique structure to all orchids. That's one of the features that unites them. Another feature that unites them is the fact that they have what's called a modified lip. So orchids are monocots. They, and just like any other monocot plant, most of house plants are actually monocots. So like your snake plant is a monocot. Your aroids are monocots, your monstera is a monocot. Most of those are, and we call them monocots because they have, you know, one leaf when they germinate. And it's a very, I guess you could call it an arbitrary definition, but more on that later. But orchids are monocots, and monocots, when they flower, they tend to flower in threes and sixes. And orchids flowers in sixes. So they have three sepals, they have three petals, and one of the petals is modified into what we call a lip. So the sepals are, so when you have a flower bud, the sepals are the outer, kind of like the outer petals or like the outer green layer. You know, sometimes they turn into petals too. Sometimes they just stay like as the green behind the petals, sort of like green leaves behind the petals. Those are sepals, and they cover the flower bud and they open up with the flower. So, in most orchids, the sepals are colored and they look like petals.
Okay.
But orchids also have two petals, which are called the wings. Those are, you know, usually pretty big. And then they have one lip, and that's the lower petal, which has been modified into some kind of really wacky shape.
Right.
In Phalaenopsis orchids, or which is one of the most common orchids on the market, you'll see that as sort of like, it's the one with the two spurs. That's the lip mm-hmm. on a Phalaenopsis. You'll see those two little wacky curly-Q right. spurs there.
If you think of an orchid flower like a face, kind of, where those big petals are like the eyes, mm-hmm. the lip would be, like, literally, I guess, what you're
where the mouth is.
Mouth. Okay.
Yeah, and in the Phalaenopsis, it kind of looks like a mouth. Right. It's actually, like, it's supposed to be in nature a landing pad for the pollinators. So a lot of orchids are very, very specialized for very specific pollinators. Hmm. And that's part of the reason why they're so diverse, because if they're specializing for each individual pollinator, you're going to get a large myriad of shapes and sizes and smells.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. that's so cool. All right, so its shape and reproductive, I guess, organs are unique to it. Mm-hmm. And then let's talk about where you find orchids.
Yeah, orchids are actually found on just about every continent except for Antarctica. Believe it or not, there are actually orchids that are native to New York and New Jersey.
Really?
Yeah, there are lady slipper orchids. The pink lady slipper is native to...
You love a lady slipper orchid.
I do love me a good lady slipper.
Okay.
Those are native. I actually found one when I was hiking in upstate New York.
By
Storm King Mountain, and I came across, it was actually around this time of year, it was early June, late May, and I found this gorgeous lady slipper just on the top of a mountain, and
wow.
I told no one about it, and I'll keep its secret location to my grave, because
I love it.
Most orchids in the wild are actually endangered.
Wow.
Even the tropical orchids are endangered as well. A lot of them are. Not all of them, but a lot of them are. And so, you know, if you do see an orchid, you know, or if you do see a plant in the wild, leave it alone. Don't take it with you. Don't think you can save it. It just,
right.
leave it be.
Okay.
And that's true for any plant in the wild. But mm-hmm. there are orchids on pretty much all seven continents except for Antarctica, and they've adapted to all different kinds of environments. There are temperate orchids. There are sort of arid region orchids. There are most of the orchids, though, are tropical, and there's, like, different realms within the tropical sphere. So there's, like, tropical wet, and there's, like, tropical dry, and then
okay.
there's tropical seasonal, like, wet, dry seasons. And there's a lot of different orchids, for example, dendrobium orchids, which, you know, they go deciduous. Like, they'll have canes, mm-hmm. and then they drop their leaves off all their canes, and then when they go deciduous in the dry season, that's when they flower.
Interesting.
So they're wack. Some of them are wacky like that. And then there are other dendrobiums that are completely, like, 100% evergreen, and they'll just, you know, keep growing and blooming.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. Do all orchids, are they all epiphytes? Do they all grow on trees?
Most orchids are epiphytes. Not okay. all of them. There are some terrestrial orchids, like jewel orchids and certain lady slipper mm-hmm. orchids, phragmopediums. Those are... for the most part, terrestrial orchids.
Okay.
They grow in the soil or they grow in moss.
Okay. That's interesting. Because the one thing that I hope everybody got the opportunity to go to the orchid show at the New York Botanical Garden this
Fabulous.
Year. Because it was wild. But something that I guess I didn't realize was how they do grow on trees. And it was so cool. I mean, they had orchids that were repurposed to look like daffodils. I mean, they had like all sorts of crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting to kind of see them in trees, kind of the way I guess they were, because that's why their roots are so crazy. They're
yeah.
they're grown to just, I mean, or they're created to just kind of grab onto whatever they can, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the thing about orchids is, or at least the thing about the roots is that, which makes orchids unique, is that a lot of orchids have modified roots. And
mm-hmm.
so if you'll see some, like on the Phalaenopsis, which you'll see in all the stores, that's the big one with the floopy leaves
right.
on the sides. They have really big, thick roots, and their roots are usually green at the tips with like sort of like a white sheath around them. It looks like it's white, like a greenish white.
Uh-huh.
And that's a layer called the velamen. It's actually a fungal layer over the orchid root. If you actually break that root, you'll see like a thin wire on the inside. That's the actual root. There's
oh,
a big thick...
So it's like a protective casing or something?
It's both a protective casing, but it's also a fungal layer that helps absorb water and retain water.
Mm.
So if you've ever taken like a squirt bottle to that and you've sprayed the white roots, you'll see just like a paper towel, you'll see the water like instantly blot in.
Yeah.
It'll instantly blot in, and you'll see it in real time blotting into the orchid roots. And it's like so wild to watch.
That's so interesting. So, because we, I threw up an Instagram for listener questions for this, and one of them said that their roots have mold on them.
Well, I mean, there's a difference between what's supposed to be there, which, right. you know, looks like a root, and then mm-hmm. mold, which means, you know, maybe you've left your orchid in water for too okay. long or kept it wet for too long. So there is a difference between that.
Mold, how could you tell the difference, I guess?
So orchid roots are supposed to be, they're supposed to have a nice white glossy sheen over them, okay. and usually green tips. The older the orchid roots get, they tend to become more of like a matte white.
Yeah.
And maybe a little shriveled. And then if they start to die off, they'll become like a lighter brown.
Okay.
You don't necessarily have to trim the lighter brown roots. You only have to trim them if they start to rot, which they'll turn black when they start to rot. And if you feel okay. them, they'll be very like hollow on the inside.
Okay.
Then you can just cut those off.
Okay. So we're looking at my orchid, my sad, sad orchid, because there's... It's kind of a great example because there's that one really healthy root.
Right.
And then they're all the, like, dried, messed up roots. So maybe I'll put a photo of it and we can say mm-hmm. it's that one. It should look like the one healthy root, right?
Yeah. And looking at your orchid, your mm-hmm. your other roots actually look okay. So that's the other thing about okay. orchids that gets a really big misconception. People look at the roots and they think that, oh, you know, these roots don't look too good. The plant is dying.
Yeah.
The roots are pretty resilient. The okay. roots, you know, they may not look the best, but mm-hmm. as long as they function, that's all the plants care about.
Got it.
You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today.
Okay, so speaking of roots, before we get into, like, orchid care, mm-hmm. let's talk about orchid bark and the growing medium you're supposed to put them in.
Absolutely.
Can you put them in soil? Number one question. And number two, let's talk about orchid bark and why it's important.
So for most orchids, especially the indoor orchids that you'll get at, like, Trader Joe's yeah. and stuff, the answer is no, they don't belong into regular potting okay. soil. They actually belong in either one of two media, either sphagnum moss mm-hmm. or orchid bark mix. Okay. And orchid bark mix is this, like, it's usually fir or cedar bark and little bits of charcoal to help purify right. the water mm-hmm. and also perlite to help keep it light and airy.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's basically made of those ingredients. You know, I have my orchids. For some of them, it depends on the orchid you have. So it's really important that when you get an orchid that you know what you're dealing with because mm-hmm. some orchids like it a little more dry and some orchids like it a little more wet. And so for most of your store-bought orchids, they'll want to be in more orchid bark mix with like a little bit of sphagnum tossed in
right.
To sort of help wick the water evenly throughout.
Because I feel like with sphagnum... Okay, so sphagnum moss is something that retains water mm-hmm. and helps keep moisture. But That's... then I feel like with orchid bark, you want it to wick the water, like you want it to be the most fast draining as possible.
Yes.
So the idea that you can put an orchid in either sphagnum moss, which is super moisture retentive, or orchid bark, which is super not, that right. to me feels a little confusing.
So it depends on your watering style and also the orchid. So some okay. orchids like to be, you know, go straight from wet to dry very fast. Because mm-hmm. if you think about it, most orchids are epiphytes. They grow on trees.
Right.
And in their native environments, especially most of the tropical orchids, which is what you'll probably come in contact with. It rains almost every day, but right. because they're in trees, the rain washes off.
Right.
So
okay.
they get wet, and that's also part of their fungal roots. Because the water is dripping off of the roots, the fungal layer of the roots, you know, they have that blotting action to, you know, sort of like soak right. in as much water while it's dripping off as okay. possible. Because then, you know, 20 minutes later when it's done, if you've ever been to Florida,
right.
you know, it rains really hard for 10 minutes and then the sun
comes out. Yeah.
And then like 20 minutes later, everything's bone dry again.
Yeah.
Like they need to suck that water in before they get bone dry again.
Okay.
And so what the orchid bark does, it sort of mimics like the tree, like nooks and crannies that they'll sort of be nestled in nature anyway.
Okay.
And with the sphagnum, usually they'll grow with the moss as well. Usually they'll be, you know, buddy buddies with moss in the trees. And the moss, they help each other out. The moss helps hold on to water so that the roots that may not have gotten as many can sort of still drink from the moss mm-hmm. all the excess water. And translating this into home growing,
right.
you know, if you are a little more forgetful in your watering, you may want to go with something planted in sphagnum. Because
okay.
when all you need to do is you just quickly soak the sphagnum until it gets wet, and then you just put it somewhere and you leave it to dry, and you don't have to touch it again until the sphagnum is dry.
Are you wrapping the roots like almost kind of like a Kokodama ball, like you're wrapping the roots in sphagnum moss?
If you're planting it in pure sphagnum, the whole thing's going to be sphagnum.
Okay.
Yeah. If you plant it in all bark, it's going to be all bark. But if you mix it, what I do is I take mostly bark and then I mix in strands
okay.
of sphagnum moss. So that way, because, you know, the bark tends to get dry, but the sphagnum moss helps keep the bark moist.
Moist.
But still breathable. And I found
okay.
that tends to work for more orchids in general,
mm-hmm.
especially in my home situation, than anything else. And then there's, of course, you know, there's always greenhouse growers of orchids. These rules don't really apply
right.
to them.
No,
they have their own
set of
rules.
No, this is for the basic, your Trader Joe's Phalaenopsis orchid.
Basic
yeah.
indoors, you know, windowsill growing, which is
okay.
what I particularly do.
So, and then the other thing you told me was maybe, because right now my orchid is an all orchid, super dry orchid bark.
Mm-hmm.
So you were saying maybe to take some sphagnum moss and kind of put it on top close to the roots that are, the new roots that are good, right?
Mm-hmm. So yours is a Phalaenopsis orchid. Mm-hmm. It falls in the Vandanaceous alliance. So Vandanaceous orchids, like the Phalaenopsis, they have two floppy leaves at the sides, or sometimes they're straight up. And they tend to grow upwards and outwards, and they tend to grow a lot of aerial roots.
Right.
So with yours has sort of grown out of the bark,
mm-hmm.
and it has all these aerial roots that are sort of poking around searching
right.
for that next moss. So what I do with roots like that is I try to dress them very lightly
mm-hmm.
in sphagnum moss. You don't have to, like, go bonkers covering them, but
okay.
just, like, toss some sphagnum on top, sort of push it in so that it stays.
Okay.
But it's still, like, you know, not all of it's covered. Like, you can still see, like, patches
right.
of the root underneath. Like, it's like a veil. And then I just take a squirt bottle and, like, you know, every other day or every couple of days, I'll just squirt that mix on top of those roots. So
mm-hmm.
that way they sort of get that slow soak.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. All right, cool. So maybe we'll do that after this interview is over so I don't mess it up. All right, cool. So that's the orchid bark. So it's pretty much 100% necessary.
For most orchids, yeah. And a lot of orchids will be sold in pure sphagnum.
Right.
And if you feel comfortable taking care of it in the sphagnum, that's fine, because you can take care of them in sphagnum.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to really ease off on the water. So if you're not a diligent waterer, maybe
right.
sphagnum is better for you. But if you tend to err on the side of overwatering,
right.
perhaps the bark
putting
is better
it in
for
bark.
You.
Okay, cool. So, care 101. Like, what does the orchid need to thrive and survive? And what should we do and what shouldn't we do?
So I'll divide this into, I'll pick three commonly grown orchids,
okay,
commonly
cool.
sold orchids. So the number one most commonly sold orchid is the Phalaenopsis
right.
orchid. That's like the big white orchids that you see in the hotels.
Right.
They have the floppy leaves on the sides and the big long flower spike with
mm-hmm.
big flowers. That's a Phalaenopsis. Then you have Oncidium types, which are dancing, we call them dancing lady orchids. Okay. Those are sort of the, they're kind of leafy. The leaves kind of look grassy. They have like big green bulbs at the bottom. We call them pseudobulbs. Those are water storing structures. And they have this big long flower spike, usually with, the most common one has lots of yellow 1-inch flowers with like a lip that looks like a dress. So they look like they're dancing ladies. So it's usually like white and black, and there's like a whole bunch of them on top of that spike. And so that's an Oncidium. And then the other most commonly sold orchid besides Oncidiums and Phalaenopsis, you may occasionally see a Vanda orchid, like a pure Vanda.
What about a Cattleya?
Cattleyas, they used to be more in common production, but you can find them in some areas, absolutely, in different parts of the country. Cattleyas will be sold alongside them in grocery stores.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll mention the Cattleya, too, because the Cattleya actually breaks the rules for the other orchids because of all the diversity.
Cool.
So, as far as care goes, like I always say, the most important thing is light.
Of course.
Depending on the orchid that you have will determine what kind of light you should give it. So Phalaenopsis orchids are sort of what I call medium to sort of lowish light plants.
Okay.
Ideally medium light, because even though they don't really quite like direct sun, they still need bright ambient light around them to sort of do their thing. Because again, they're not growing at the forest floor where they're completely shaded. They're still growing in the trees.
Okay.
They're just lightly shaded by leaves. So they still need bright light. So I would consider the Phalaenopsis a medium light plant. I would put it, you know, here in New York, I would put it in a window that faces another building. Or I would put it, you know, maybe a few feet away from a really bright sunny window.
Okay.
So that's that one. As far as light for the Oncidium or the Dancing Lady Orchids, they need a little more light than the Phalaenopsis. In fact, they have those special little green bulbs called pseudobulbs at their bases to store water because they are much higher up in the canopy. They have very wiry roots. Their roots are much thinner than the Phalaenopsis, but they have more of them, and they actually like more of the sphagnum. So for them, I would plant them a little more in the sphagnum. I would err more on the side of sphagnum if I was planting them.
Okay.
But, because usually a general rule with orchids is the thinner the root, the more moss you're going to have to use.
Interesting. Okay. So yeah, that makes sense.
Big, thick roots are usually pretty succulent. So if you think, ah, this is succulent, probably wants to be on the drier side. That's sort of a good trick to, if you don't know what you have, to sort of like, you know, do well with it anyway.
Okay.
So Oncidiums tend to like moss more. So actually mine I have is planted in sphagnum, like more sphagnum than bark, but I do toss in a couple bark chips here and there.
Okay.
Those will like a lot of light. So I would give them either morning or afternoon sun, a window that gets,
like a south or west.
I would do either an east or west, a south.
Okay.
I've heard of some people taking some Oncidiums and putting them in a, blasting them with light in a southern window and doing really well for them.
Okay.
But Oncidiums are kind of like, they're kind of divas. Their leaves tend to get spotty when they get too much light. So, I mean, if you're into the gorgeous foliage, then just kind of err on the lower side of light with them.
Okay.
And then there's Vanda orchids, which are just, they're usually sold bare root. They're these big, long, gorgeous plants with really long roots that hang very far below the plant. Those are the plants that you literally, you hang. There's no other way to keep them. They're not even planted in anything. You hang them, and then you take them in your shower every other day, and you just hang them back in your window. They're actually, you know, because they are media-less, because you don't plant them in anything, they're arguably one of the easiest. And they're the ones that you want to put in your southern window. They're the ones you blast with light.
Okay.
In addition...
And you're watering them up every other day.
Basically every other day. Or every day if they're really getting good sunlight. So you just basically unhook them, you put them in your shower, you run the shower for a couple of minutes. You can even let them drip dry in the shower, and then right before you're ready to go, you just pop them back in the window. And they're good to go.
Okay, interesting. So...
And then...
Okay, no, I'm just going to... Just for my learning process. So, Phalaenopsis, bright and direct. Dancing lady, east-west. And then Vanda or...
Cattleya.
Cattleya is the brightest light.
The brightest
southern-facing window.
The Cattleyas are the ones that you can blast with as much direct sunlight indoors as possible. You can even put your Cattleyas and your Vandas outdoors in the shade. If you have that. So, like, if you're in a building that faces another building and there's sort of like a an ambient light chasm where sunlight doesn't really come down there, you can hang them, you know,
on outside your window, or something,
on your fire escape, you know, and those will be all good for that. So,
cool.
And with those, you actually get much bigger and more quantity of blooms.
Okay.
So, and they'll bloom, a lot of Cattleyas will bloom once a year, but some of them will bloom twice a year. Vandas, and they'll bloom, the beautiful thing about orchids is that you know, whereas other plants flower for only like a week or two mm-hmm. at a time, orchids stay in bloom, right. some of them for months.
Yeah.
And they're gorgeous. Like, I have a coconut orchid at home. It's mm-hmm. a Maxillaria tenuifolia. It's a coconut orchid. It smells like coconut cream pie. It's amazing.
Ugh, amazing.
And it's been in bloom for like a month and a half now. Wow. And I wake up every morning to the smell of coconuts. It fills the room. It's a great plant. And that one's actually an easy plant to grow, too. I treat it just like the Oncidium. I have it in a western window. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of orchid where the more light it gets, the more fragrant it is.
That's so cool.
And cattleyas are the same way, too. Cattleyas are, you know, blast them with as much light as possible. They'll grow. They'll have these gorgeous, huge corsage flowers. If, mm-hmm. If you know,
oh, like, yeah, okay.
Those are cattleya flowers, the old okay. corsage flowers. So
interesting.
If you've watched like an old, you know, 50s movie, yes. you'll see the gorgeous corsage flower. That's a cattleya orchid.
That's a cattleya. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the cool thing about orchids. But I feel like to that point, I think a lot of people buy an orchid when it's in bloom from the grocery store, and then when the blooms die, they just throw the orchid out, not knowing.
Yeah, the plant is still alive.
Right,
yeah.
The plant is still alive.
Yeah, so it's like they think that the plant is dead just because the flowers right. fall off. And I always tell, and this is true for any plant, I tell people this, I'm like, look, you know, the flowers are the reproductive parts of the plant, right? Right. You know, just like you're not always in the mood, the right. plant's not always in the mood. So, you know, they'll
I love that.
Yeah. They'll have flowers, they'll drop them, and, you know, as long as the plant is alive, you can get it to bloom again. Like, that's the right. beauty of orchids. They're like, they have flowers for such a long time, and you can get them to bloom again. They're great plants to have.
No, totally. Okay, cool. So, that's, oh, so watering, it sounds like it's really personal based on, so does, okay, so do each of these orchids have different watering needs as well?
Yeah, they do tend to have somewhat different needs, although I keep mine on sort of a general schedule. Mm-hmm. I kind of like monitor mine. But for the most part, you'll be spritzing them, you know, in the wintertime, you'll be spritzing them every day because the humidity is just too low.
Spritzing and their roots or spritzing the flowers?
Plant, okay. Everything. Okay. Everything except for the flowers. Like if they're in bloom, don't spritz the flowers, but spritz the leaves, spritz okay. the roots,
stalk,
spritz
whatever.
Basically
out
everything
there.
Else.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so when you spritz them, spritz everything else. And then what I do is I soak them. So mm-hmm. I give them, like, I have a big tray, and I put them in the tray, and I just dump water over them until they're sitting in about, like, a quarter inch of water.
Okay.
So that their roots aren't sitting in water, but the water can still, like, wick up into the media.
And how often do you do that?
Anywhere between once a week to every 10 days, so.
And how long do you soak for?
For about, you know, some of them I soak for like an entire day, or some of them I just leave them there until the water, because I leave them in such little water, mm-hmm. I just wait till the water dries up. But if it's like a really humid day where the water isn't drying up, then I would only leave them in for like a day or two.
See, that's interesting, because you, when, so this wilted orchid that's so sad with us right now, Chris has been trying to help me with it, I think, since we first met, and I probably neurotically text you pictures of it like once a month. But I think when it was doing its best was when I hadn't forgotten about it and you were telling me to soak it for 12 to 24 hours.
Right.
I think I was soaking it for 12 to 24 hours every 2 weeks. And I think that's when the leaves at least were like the plumpest and no wrinkles mm-hmm. and like the leaves looked good. Now I have forgotten. I haven't soaked it in a while now. I don't even want to say. But so if someone else is like me and has a neglected orchid, would you suggest I soak this orchid for a long time to try to rehydrate it?
Well, you don't want to run the risk of rotting it out.
Okay.
So you want to, so the thing with the orchids is like any epiphyte, they want to go from wet to dry really mm-hmm. fast and dry to wet really fast.
Right.
So I would just soak it more frequently, but okay. just make sure that it gets dry. So instead of soaking it once a week, I would soak it maybe twice or three times a week, making sure that I pull it out and let it dry out in between
okay.
the soakings. Make sure it gets nice and completely dry, and then soak it again as soon as it hits the dry mark.
Okay, but you're still soaking it for 12 to 24 hours.
About, yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, so you're soaking it once a week, mm-hmm. you're spritzing it occasionally, like every day in the winter,
yeah.
every other day in the summer, when yeah. you kind of remember.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a fern, where like, spritz it when you remember to fern.
Right, right. And some of them really love it, and some of them are like, okay, this is nice.
Right, whatever, but yeah. you're spritzing it isn't going to hurt it.
Right.
So that's light. So do any, Phalaenopsis Dancing Lady Vanda, does anything need more water?
Pretty much
that's the overarching water rule of thumb for orchids in general.
Yeah, that's pretty much overarching, and you'll hear some orchid fanatics, you know, disagree with me, and that's fine, because, you know, the beauty of orchids is, like, our homes are very different environments, and they're very receptive to that. So, you know, even though I may water about once a week for my conditions, someone may be watering every 10 days for their conditions. They might have, you know, wetter conditions, in which case, that's fine. There's no hard rules. It's sort of figuring out what works for you. But working within the framework of...
I love that.
Okay, orchids like this, and this. As long as they sort of get it around, you know, this time. That's why I always say check your plants. Like, whenever someone says, oh, how often does this need to be watered for any plant? I always say... check the soil, check the media.
Totally.
So, because the plant will tell you.
Right. Okay, so let's go through. Say I went to, so first off, one of the other questions from a listener was, is buying an orchid from Trader Joe's or Whole Foods okay?
Yeah, it's perfectly fine. Those orchids are designed for indoor home growing. They're very tough. They're very hardy. They're okay with being abused and neglected.
Okay.
And they can bounce back really quickly.
Okay, cool.
Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. Take, plant friends, there is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.
So let's just go through I go to a Whole Foods, I see an orchid that's beautifully in bloom, mm-hmm. I pick the orchid up, I bring it home. What does the next year of caring for that orchid look like?
Okay.
In general.
So,
and it's probably going to be a Phalaenopsis orchid, I'm guessing, right?
Probably, yeah. Or whatever you want. Like with picking any plant, you always want to inspect it, make sure it doesn't have any pests that you're bringing into the home. And especially for selecting flowering plants, you always want to select the ones that are in bud and haven't quite opened yet.
Right. Oh, that's a good point.
Because that way you maximize your time with the blooms.
Totally. Because if you bought them all flowered,
then there's only...
Those flowers are going to... So you want some closed buds and some open buds.
Exactly. Okay. Because that way you maximize your amount of time with the flowers, which is what you want, ultimately.
Totally. Okay.
So when you take that orchid home, let's say you take a Phalaenopsis home, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll sell them sort of like staged in a pot. Like it'll be a Phalaenopsis planted in sphagnum in like a little plastic sleeve inside of a ceramic.
Plastic sleeve, yes.
So what I always do is I remove that plastic sleeve. I think that it keeps the orchid a little too wet. And I immediately repot it, full sphagnum and everything, into like a nice terracotta. And orchids, from my experience, orchids love terracotta because terracotta breathes. Mm-hmm. Terracotta keeps the humidity high around the roots. And actually, a lot of times my orchids, their roots cling to the terracotta. They love the terracotta so much. It's just that like, not quite wet, not quite dry, but like moisture that they love. Like that's where they want to be. And so I plant them into that. And, you know, if there are some aerial roots sticking out, because Phalaenopsis do have aerial roots, that's okay. If some are like floating out of the pot, that's fine. I like to dress them a little bit with the sphagnum. And, you know, just mist them every so often. The lower the light you give them, the less often you have to mist them or water them.
Okay.
Just like with any plant.
Okay.
I actually have some Phalaenopsis, you know, sort of like 5 feet away from like a western window. So they're not getting too much light. And I water them maybe, you know, I don't even really spritz them every day. I spritz them maybe... maybe once a week. And I also water them once a week. I probably water them, spritz them when I water them. Or like... I'll spritz them, and then, like, a couple days later, I'll water it.
Right.
And then, like, a couple days later, I'll spritz it. So, like, once a week, I'll spritz it. Once a week, I'll water. And they do just fine.
Okay. So, you bring it home. Mm-hmm. Ideally, it's potted in the terracotta. But if not, you're repotting it. But the most important, even if you're leaving it in the glazed, whatever it comes with, take that plastic sleeve out.
Take the plastic sleeve out and make sure that it has drainage. Because the orchids, they don't like to sit in water.
Right.
They love to drain.
Okay.
They can't stand wet feet.
Right. I love thinking about it in its natural habitat with the rain just washing off. I love just keeping that as the rule of thumb.
That's perfect. If you can visualize that, that's exactly what you want to achieve.
Okay. So since it's in bloom, are there any different things that you have to do to care for the orchid when it's in bloom versus when it's not in bloom?
Really, no.
Okay.
But if you are like me and you sort of want to push the envelope a little bit, and this is if you're more comfortable with your orchids, you can keep them when they're in bloom a little on the dry side.
Okay.
And they'll keep their blooms for like at least a week or two longer.
Interesting.
So like, and when I say a little on the dry side, I mean like either the pseudobulbs or the leaves are just starting to wrinkle. They're not like badly wrinkling, but they're just starting to wrinkle.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of keeping them at that like light stress level will help them keep their flowers for longer.
Interesting. Okay. And so we enjoy 2 months of gorgeous flowers and then the flowers fall off.
Right.
So now what is the care? How do we prepare the orchid to kind of go dormant for a bit? And then how do we nurture it to rebloom? Because I think everybody who has an orchid that's been gifted to them or bought one has a flower. And then they're like, well, how the hell do I get this to rebloom?
Right. And so, again, care depends on the orchid. Most people will probably have a Phalaenopsis. Phalaenopsis can be tricked into blooming twice. If you cut the flower spike, the flower spike will have the flowers, and then along the flower spike, lower on the flower spike, they'll have sheaths, like little tiny little leaf sheaths.
Okay.
If you cut right above the second leaf sheath, the spike will split.
Okay.
And it may have another flower spike. But then if you force it to bloom twice, that Phalaenopsis, once it does finally go dormant, will be dormant for almost an entire year.
Nap. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Versus if you just cut the whole spike off once it's done flowering, you could probably get it back in 6 months.
So by cutting the spike off, is there any, like, you know, when you're propagating, you need to cut around the node, whatever. Like, is there any specific place in the flower spike you cut once the orchid is completely done blooming?
I mean, I cut the entire spike off because I don't want it to bloom twice. I cut it really close to the base.
Okay.
As long as you don't damage the base, you can cut it pretty close to the base and that's it.
Okay. And if it's a Phalaenopsis, cut after the second sheath to rebloom after the first bloom is done.
Right. If you want to force those second blooms, they're not going to be as big as the first ones because, again, the plant already spent most of its energy. But it can try to bloom again if you do want that.
Okay. So I've cut the sheath and now what? Now I just leave it?
You pretty much take care of it like a normal plant.
Like a normal plant.
Or like you've always been taking care of it and you wait. And so different ones like the dancing ladies, the cattleyas, and the vandas, they tend to bloom more so on clockwork. So for them, it's a time thing.
Mm-hmm.
You just wait until they're in bloom again, or maybe they need a little more light to bloom, so you would just increase their light a little bit.
Okay.
And then they'll bloom again, but the Phalaenopsis is a little wacky, and I think this is part of the reason why orchids get a bad rap, or especially the Phalaenopsis gets a bad rap, because what they don't tell you is that Phalaenopsis needs a temperature drop at night to form a flower spike again.
Okay.
So I've heard stories of people having their Phalaenopsis for years and years and years. They're like, it won't bloom again, but it's not dying, and it's growing all these new leaves, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, it needs a temperature drop at night. Like, it needs that trigger, because where Phalaenopsis are native to in the, I believe they're native to the Philippines and Indonesia, and I think they're a little higher up in altitude, it does get cool where they are. So they need a night drop in like the 60s, the low 60s, to initiate that flower. So for at least 2 weeks to initiate that flower spike. And then once it starts to form, you can, you know, do whatever you want with it. But it just needs that trigger to start flowering, and then it will.
Okay, so... Okay, I have a lot of questions about this.
And that's
this.
The secret sauce.
Yeah, that's the secret sauce. So I feel like some people like take their orchids and put them under their sink when they're dormant. So it's not getting any light. Like they're like, it's dormant, I'm going to put it away, and then I'm going to pull it out again in the spring.
Yeah, no, that's not true. That will kill the plant because, you know, it's a tropical plant. It'll still be alive, and it needs photosynthesis.
Right.
And while it's, quote-unquote, dormant, or really I should just say not in bloom, when it's not in bloom, it still needs the light to gather energy for its next bloom cycle.
Okay.
Because if you really think about it, a lot of orchids, their flowers are bigger than the plants itself. Like, if you think about a Phalaenopsis, or if you think about the Trader Joe's orchids, there is more flower volume by mass and volume than there is actual plant.
Right.
So if you think about that, it makes sense that the plant has to rest for a couple months to gain enough energy to literally form pretty much something from nothing. It's taking like air and water and like sunlight, and it's transforming it into like, I mean, it's not transforming it into matter, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Totally.
It's like making all this stuff from nothing, and it really does need that time.
Okay. So don't stick it in that Mythbuster number one. So, and then... Okay, so you let it lie dormant, in 6 months, you're like, oh man, this hasn't reflowered yet, like, I want to help it reflower. So the only thing you can really do is to make it cold at night.
For that one, and specifically in the low 60s. So if you have, like, a cool basement with, like, an artificial light you can put down there, or, like, really close to a basement window, if your upstairs is super hot, you can try that. If you live in a dry desert, like if you live in the Southwest where it really doesn't get cold, you may want to try like a room or a fish tank and just blast the AC.
Okay.
It needs to get warm in the day. So I am not sure if it's just the temperature swing or if it specifically needs the temperature in the 60s. Mm-hmm. All I know is that 60s at night and sort of like in the 70s or in the 80s during the day. And that should be enough. Like here in the Northeast, like that's basically just putting it outside for, you know, the spring or the fall with care to make sure that, you know, it doesn't dry out. It doesn't like blow over or anything like that. You know, typical pitfalls for outdoor stuff.
So what about fertilizer?
Orchids generally, and I'm going to get a little flack for this, they generally don't need as much fertilizer as you think they do.
Okay.
They are epiphytes, and if you think about it, in their native environment, they're subsisting off of the scraps of bark and detritus that falls on them.
Right.
So there's not a lot of nutrients that they get in nature. Now, that doesn't mean that they aren't still plants and won't respond to nutrients.
Right,
they'll
totally
respond to nutrients. So I only fertilize my orchids when they're in growth.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you tell if an orchid is in growth is by the roots.
Okay.
So if you see a new root that's forming, the orchid is growing and the orchid is healthy, because orchid health is determined not by the leaves, but by the roots.
Okay.
So if you see a nice root growing with a nice green tip, you're doing something good. Or even if you see a nice new leaf forming, that's also a really good sign too. You know, not dying is good.
Right. That's like the rule of thumb with orchids, especially right. when it's dormant.
Yes.
So you don't think fertilizer is like that?
I think you should fertilize mm-hmm. during the growing cycle. Like, if you see a new leaf coming up, I would give it, like, a very weak dilution of fertilizer.
Okay.
So whatever it says for indoor plants, just cut that in half.
Okay, so you don't need a specific orchid fertilizer.
You can if you want to, but there's no real need.
No need to? Yeah. Okay, cool. So just give it, like, a nice little splash of fertilizer while it's blooming, but while it's dormant, like, don't give it fertilizer thinking that the fertilizer is going to make it bloom.
Oh, no. You should be giving the fertilizer when you're dormant, not when it's blooming. Because when it's blooming...
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. When it's blooming, it has everything. But when it's dormant, I still wouldn't even call it. I would just say not in bloom. When it's not in bloom...
That's when you're fertilizing.
That's when you're fertilizing. Because when it's not in bloom, it's growing vegetatively. Like, it's making the new leaves. It's making the new roots. It's actually making progress on itself.
Got it. Okay. Got it.
You got to work on yourself before you put yourself out there.
I love it. Right. So it's like going to the gym, getting ready for the bloom, for the bikini season.
I love it. That's like the perfect analogy.
Okay, cool. I love that. Okay, cool. So before we get into some listener questions, any other myth busting. Why does everyone think you have to water your orchids with an ice cube?
I don't know who started that. I think that it's like an evil trick that like someone in the plant industry somewhere told people so that they could kill their plants so that they would buy more.
Interesting.
If you think about it, there's no ice in the tropics. Why does it make sense?
Or cold rain, like... Because I think that people say, oh, because the ice cube melts, so they get a slow, and you can measure the amount of water that they get, but it's getting freezing water.
Right, and usually that ice cube is, like, by the crown of the plant, which is where the plant's growing, which is where you don't want it to get cold. Like, the slow release makes sense.
Right.
But the temperature will kill the plant. So, like, that's why I always say the squirt bottle is way better than the ice cube. The mm-hmm. squirt bottle fulfills everything that the ice cube fulfills, and you can use warm water on it.
Right.
So... 100%. Okay. And for your orchids, I would actually use warm water, like room temperature water or warm water from the tap is fine. Another myth that I'd like to bust is you don't need special water for your orchids. Like, unless your water, like you live in an area where your water is extremely hard and it's well water, you don't need to really, like, use anything kind of special for your orchids. Tap water is fine. I use tap water for my orchids and, you know,
they're just fine. Okay, so tap water is great. Any other myths that we need to bust about orchids?
That they're
hard. Besides the fact that they're not hard,
Yeah, they're not hard. Don't use ice cubes on them. That's like, that's a great way to kill your orchids if you use an ice cube on them. They're not hard. Don't use ice cubes. You know, there's an orchid for you. There's all different shapes, sizes, colors. They don't all need low light, just like I mentioned before. The Vandas and the Cattleyas, which are easy to find, they like being blasted with sunlight, and they are fragrant. More so the Cattleyas than the Vandas.
That could be fun for me with my southern-facing window.
Oh,
to get one of those... Yeah, you like a big hanging in my door or something.
That would
be really cool.
It'll be totally wild.
Yeah, that would be really... That would up my urban jungle for sure.
Mm-hmm. And there are some orchid vendors here in the city as well.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. Let's talk about you love your orchid guy in Union Square, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I go every Saturday to this orchid vendor, Da Silva Orchids, and he's in Union Square, and he has actually... different kinds of uncommon orchids, orchids that you wouldn't be able to find, like, at Trader Joe's, but are just as easy to take care of. He has gorgeous Cattleyas. He has some of the hanging Vandas. Mm-hmm. He has Miltonopsis is another big one that's coming up. I don't know if that's going to be in the big box stores, but it might be in the big box stores coming soon. They call it the pansy orchid. It's an orchid that literally looks like a giant pansy. I swear to God. The flowers are, like, the size of... They're, like... as wide as almost a grapefruit.
Okay.
It's this huge flower. They're kind of fragrant sometimes.
Cool.
And they have these wacky splotches on them that make them look like giant pansy flowers.
Oh, I love that. Okay, cool. So Da Silva Orchids, can you order online with him if people wanted to experiment with him? Or
I don't really remember or know, but...
we'll put a link in the show notes to him.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's go to some listener questions. I think we've answered a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
Water culture. So actually Mr. D times 3, who was on last week's episode, said that he has an orchid doing really well in water culture. And one of our listeners also wrote in wondering about semi-hydro and full water culture with orchids and what your opinion is on that and how to do it.
So here's the thing with water culture and orchids.
Okay.
just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something.
Okay.
So with water culture, and I've seen a lot of water culture orchids, like, you can get them to survive.
Is that putting them in water? Like, having them in a glass of water?
That's, like, pretty much growing them in a glass of water.
Okay. So, like, the way we propagate plants or, like, right. do that kind of thing.
Right.
Okay.
Or something very similar to that, where the plant is, like, always touching water.
Mm-hmm.
Just because a plant will live like that doesn't mean that it does well like that. And
okay.
I've seen a lot of Phalaenopsis where they're, like, they've grown it in water culture and they're like, oh, look, it has this, you know, couple of flowers. And it's like, well, if you really think about it, for that type of orchid, that should have, like, five times as many flowers as you're getting with it growing it in water culture.
Okay.
So, like, just because it'll survive like that doesn't mean that it will thrive like that or do as well as its potential.
Okay.
So, I personally am against water culture mm-hmm. orchids, but, you know, if you can get it to work and you're happy with the results, that's good on you.
Okay. And it could be a fun way to experiment if you're just interested in, like, being a mad scientist and, like, experimenting with different ways of growing stuff, right?
Absolutely. You know, I always encourage experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
What I actually do is semi-water culture, like semi-hydroponics.
Yeah.
It's where, like, I do let them soak for, like, a day or two in, like, a quarter inch of water. But again, the media and the pot is in the water. The orchid and the roots are sort of, like, in the media somewhere, but the water level doesn't come high enough to really touch the roots on the inside of the pot.
Okay.
So it's, like, the water and the moisture is being wicked up.
Okay.
And so the way I water them is I have them in, like, a tray or a bowl, and I pour water on top of the media of the orchids. I pretty much splash water all over the orchids
mm-hmm.
and their media so that it drains down into the media and then collects at the bottom, and then I stop adding water when there's about a quarter inch of water there.
Okay, got it.
And I let them sit in it, and I pretty much let them sit in it until it dries up. So that way, they're always moist, but they're not wet and they're not sitting in moisture so that their roots can still breathe. And they do very well like that, at least for me.
And that's, you're doing that once a week is your way to water your orchids? Or that's
about.
You're doing that full-time, or that's the way you're watering them?
That's the way I'm watering them.
Okay, got
yeah.
it. So that's, so semi-hydro, you definitely recommend.
Semi-hydro.
That's how you've been telling us to water this whole time.
Pretty much.
Okay,
and semi-hydro, like, more hardcore semi-hydro is sort of like keeping them perpetually sitting
right.
in water.
Uh-huh.
But they do much better when they dry out in between the waterings, from my experience. You
okay.
get bigger blooms, you get better blooms, you get, you know.
Okay,
and
cool.
that's what you want from
right.
the orchids, is
no,
the blooms.
No, totally. We're in it for the flowers.
Yeah.
For sure. All right, cool. So that's that one. Okay, so then another listener wrote in, what happens if you've noticed mold on your roots in a bad way, not in a good way?
Mold on the roots in a bad way, if the root is far gone, I would just cut it off.
Okay.
But if it's kind of savable, where it's like the beginning of mold, I would take hydrogen peroxide
mm-hmm.
and just kind of take the orchid out of the media, wash all the roots down with hydrogen peroxide, the same stuff you put on scrapes and
right.
burns, and just sort of replant it in fresh media.
Okay.
And that should take care of it.
Okay, cool. Okay, this was a listener wrote in saying that she has a fully bloomed orchid but is noticing that the leaves are yellowing.
Just now, orchids, even though we treat them as different plants, they
mm-hmm.
still are plants. A lot of the signs are still the same, just like any other plants.
Right.
If they wrinkle, it means that they're dry, just like a succulent.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them have succulent features, like the Phalaenopsis is succulent.
Yeah, mine is real wrinkled right now. Yeah. Okay.
But they are succulent, and they show the similar signs just like any other plant does. So if it has yellow leaves and the yellow leaves are dropping, it's either, just like any other plant, temperature stress or overwatering.
So you could be potentially overwatering your orchid with it. Okay.
Yeah, especially if there's yellow leaves and the rest of the orchid seems pretty plump, or maybe you see the media is a little wet, or
mm-hmm.
maybe there's fungus gnats flying around.
Right.
You've probably overwatered.
Okay, cool. Story of our lives is beginning plant people overwatering. Okay, what to do? Oh, well, how do you encourage flowering? So how do you encourage flowering, letting it rest, and then with Phalaenopsis doing a cold spout? But anything else with other orchids?
Until you get into, like, some of the collector species orchids,
right.
most of the other orchids, like cattleyas, are pretty much like clockwork.
They'll
bloom at a certain time of year, like, give or take a week or two or a couple weeks, and they'll just have their, you know, flowers when they have their flowers.
Okay.
So there's really no secret sauce to them. They're very easy. Vandas are pretty easy. As long as the orchid is getting enough light for those other orchids,
mm-hmm.
they will flower like clockwork.
Okay, cool.
So if they really are actually pretty nice. Actually, I would say even the Phalaenopsis is a little harder than the other orchids because it needs that temperature drop. It needs that extra finesse.
That's interesting.
But the dancing ladies, they come back like nobody's business.
Cool. And then last question was just a listener wrote in saying that she just noticed that a flower spike is developing. Mm-hmm. So is there anything you need to do to help the flower spike actually flower? Like, do you have to tie it to a post or do you have to like watch it or do anything, or you just let it take, let nature take its course and it's going to be fine?
Yeah, I mean, some people like to clip them up. I like to let my flowers hang wild. It,
right.
It gives it a much more natural look. It sometimes the flower spikes get very heavy. It may flip the pot over, in which mm-hmm. case you may want to either stake it up or sort of stage pot it into something more stable so that it can stay up. But, you know, there's no real need. Unless you want to show it off or you like a certain way for it to look, you can clip it up. But otherwise, you know, once, like I said, it's really easy. Once they start flowering, they start flowering. They take care of everything themselves.
Okay, cool. I'm excited, Chris. Mm-hmm. This is going to be my year of orchids.
Oh, I'm going to give you a starter orchid.
Oh my God, what kind?
Oh, it'll be a surprise.
It'll be a surprise. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I'll follow up. So people follow us on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
But so to wrap up, I guess you are the ultimate plant person. You have such a plant collection. Why do you think it's important for everyone to not only try, like, obviously we know why everyone should try a plant, but why should everyone try an orchid, and what makes orchid care so exciting and so like necessary for a part of a plant person's journey?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so like, you've experimented with succulents, you've experimented with leafy plants, mm-hmm. and like, there comes a point where like, foliage is nice, but like, with orchids, there's a reward to all your effort.
Yeah, man.
Not saying that like, foliage isn't a reward, mm-hmm. but saying that like, you know, I've gotten this thing through its life cycle to flower for me,
right.
and I can get it to flower again, and it'll keep flowering forever and ever and ever, because plants can live forever.
Yeah.
And just that reward of, like, I've made this thing so happy, it's producing flowers, mm-hmm. like, for me is just, like, above and beyond. And then on top of it, just the other rewards, like, the shape of the flower, if you like it, or the color of the flower, or
right.
the fragrance of the flower. Like, it's an exciting event in the plant's life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an exciting event in my life whenever any of my plants flower. So it's like, just that extra level of, like, you know, I have foliage plants, now let me try something flowering that's
yeah.
like super easy to care for. So I think that it's important that every plant person tries orchids, you know, tries to learn their secrets, you know, and even if you may never be good at orchids, you know, at least try them to say that you tried them.
Right.
But, you know, because, you know, there are some people who are super good at foliage plants and kill every succulent. There are
right.
some people that great at succulents kill every foliage plant.
Totally.
There are some people who kill everything they touch. But, you know, for me, it's about trial and error. It's about knowing your space. And it's about, you know, figuring out what your plants want and just being perceptive to the little signs that your plants give you
yeah.
as sort of distress. And, like, trying not to think of them as such a different category that, like, all bets are off. It's like, no, they're still plants. They still have their planty rules. They need their light. They wrinkle when they're thirsty.
Right.
Their leaves turn yellow when they're overwatered. You know, it's the same basic principle. It's just the watering's a little different. And for some of them, maybe the lighting's a little different. But other than that, they can pretty much keep them aside.
Yeah.
And the story I always tell is my Cattleyas, I have one Cattleya and I have one Encyclia, and mm-hmm. they came from a greenhouse and randomly, you know, some succulent fell in it and started growing, and I have this, like, Graptopetalum succulent mm-hmm. growing with my orchid.
That's so cool.
And
Plant friends,
yeah. But also to show to people that literally the care for these is the same.
Right.
You can keep them both just like this. And
right.
It, like, just to sort of blow people's brains, like, this is easy. You
yeah,
can do it.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that getting an orchid to rebloom is like the feeling of having a new Monstera leaf unfurl times 10. Because it's work. Even with this orchid that I still haven't been able, the only reason why I've kept it is a friend gave it to me, and mm-hmm. I want to honor her.
Mm-hmm.
And the last 2 months I've really forgotten about it. But the idea of being able to nurture something, and even the idea of like having maybe it not bloom for 2 years and then having it bloom, like that is a lesson in patience, man.
Oh, yeah.
Like that, I feel like you get more. We're probably going to learn patience on orchids even more than on most of our foliage plants, because they grow leaves more frequently than I think an orchid blooms.
Yeah, yeah. Orchids grow pretty slowly. So mm-hmm. with orchids, patience is a virtue.
Yeah, totally. Oh, I love it. As always, I love you so much. Mm-hmm. Where can we find you? Where can we find the sale? Give us all the goods.
So my name is Chris Satch. You can find me on Instagram at Botanic Tonic. But more importantly,
for all the orchid photos you could ever dream of, go follow Chris at Botanic Tonic. His Instagram is amazing.
But even more importantly is that you follow The Sill.
Absolutely.
At The Sill. Where you'll find all sorts of very fun, inspirational photos. You can visit us at thesill.com. Check us out. We deliver plants to your door. And we have online workshops and all kinds of other stuff. Help at thesill.com. You have all kinds of different plant questions. We answer your plant questions in a timely manner. So, yeah, definitely follow The Sill.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll put links to everything in the show notes. And thanks again. I'll see you next time on our plant next chat.
Yeah, you too. It was wonderful being here. Doom, 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 doom,
doom, doom, doom, doom. Was that not the freaking best? I love Chris. Chris was my first guest on episode 2 of Lumen Girl Radio, and now episode 30. I think it's really fun that he's back on the show for my 30th episode, because I just can't freaking believe it's episode 30 already. So Chris, I'm so thankful to you. The Sill, I'm thankful to you. And once again, if you guys are interested in joining the Plant Parent Club or purchasing anything off of The Sill, maybe getting one of their locally sourced planters, you can visit www.thesill.com and use the code BLOOM5 for $5 off. All right, plant friends, see you in 2 weeks. And until then, keep blooming and keep growing. Thanks again for having a listen today. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Bloom and Grow Radio on iTunes and leave us a review. If you want to follow the Bloom and Grow journey and are interested in more plant tips, give us a follow on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio and visit www.bloomandgrowradio.com to join the email list. And please let me know what you want to hear in the future episodes. I'm here to help you keep blooming and keep growing. Bloom and Grow Radio. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group. So if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up, so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya, and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.